Memoria Press now offers 6 levels of the Simply Classical curriculum for students with special needs. These full-year curriculum packages for children with learning challenges enable you to teach reading, writing, arithmetic, art, poetry, science, history, Latin, literature, and Christian studies with incremental classical methods. Visit classicalspecialneeds.com and enter promo code LPR17 to save on resources for your home or school.
Seems like every time you turn around, there is something approaching a landmark Supreme Court case being argued or being decided nowadays. One of them might be in the area of free speech or compelled speech, a case heard before the Supreme Court Tuesday this week, National Institute of Family and Life Advocates v. Becerra, raises the question of a California law that would compel a certain kind of speech from pro-life pregnancy centers. Well, it depends on what the center is. Is it licensed or unlicensed? But it still compels speech. How did the Supreme Court hear this case? What might they decide and what might the implications be? Joining us to answer those questions on this Thursday afternoon, David French, a regular guest, senior writer for National Review, constitutional law attorney. He previously served as senior counsel for the Alliance Defending Freedom and for the American Center for Law and Justice. He's author of a recent column titled, "At the Supreme Court, California Puts Its Abortion Extremism on Display." David, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
When analysts look at this California law and say that it is gerrymandered, what do they mean by that?
Yeah, what they mean is pretty simple, that California intended for its law to focus on pro-life pregnancy centers, but if it wrote the law and said pro-life pregnancy centers must do X, then that would be transparently viewpoint discrimination, transparently targeting a particular viewpoint. So instead, what they did is they wrote the law broadly and then began to carve out exception after exception after exception to it until it, as a practical matter, applied basically only to pro-life pregnancy centers. So that's the gerrymandering. Essentially, it's disguised viewpoint discrimination. If you look at the law on its face, it doesn't appear to be targeted directly at pro-life pregnancy centers, but when you understand the effect of all the exceptions and exemptions written into it, you realize that it actually does apply mainly, almost exclusively, to pro-life pregnancy centers.
What would the California law as written require pro-life pregnancy centers, both licensed and unlicensed, to do?
Yeah, so licensed centers, those were, you know, that provide medical services by licensed providers, are required to post a notice informing clients that California provides free and low-cost abortions to qualifying patients and then requires them to post a phone number where clients can call and get information about those free and low-cost abortions. So in essence, what it's doing is it's requiring pro-life people to advertise for abortion and not just advertise that free abortions are available, but actually provide information that gives patients access to those free or low-cost abortions. I mean, imagine you walk into Democratic Party headquarters and prominently posted is, "Are you sure you want to be here? The Republican headquarters is at, you know, and here's the phone number." So you're requiring these pro-life pregnancy centers to actively advertise for a point of view and for a procedure that they are opposing and deeply opposed. So that's for the licensed centers. The unlicensed centers are required to post very prominently the fact that they are unlicensed in multiple languages. Now, what's interesting about that, a lot of people hear that requirement and they think, well, it's not a big deal. Why would we want, it doesn't matter if they're advertising whether they're licensed or unlicensed, but the requirements are unbelievably burdensome. So as Justice Alito and Justice Kennedy were able to coax out of the California lawyer at the oral argument, if a pro-life pregnancy center wanted to post a notice and wanted to rent a billboard and just say "choose life" on it, that under this law, they would have to clutter that billboard with a notice, say, for example, in LA County, in 13 different languages that it's not a licensed facility, and have to do it in equal font to the "choose life" advertisement. So essentially what you're doing is you're transforming a Choose Life advertisement into an advertisement saying we're not licensed in 13 different languages. And so essentially what you're doing is you're placing an undue burden on the center's expression, requiring them in their written materials to put forward a message that they're not intending to put forward. And so that's what's required of licensed and unlicensed centers.
So in your opinion, David, what was the real purpose of the California law as it was written?
Well, the real purpose is to try to commandeer the speech of pro-life pregnancy centers to facilitate access to abortion. That was the purpose. And to try to deter people, in my view, that's the real purpose, and try to deter people from using these services. Now, you know, the interesting thing is they were trying to say, well, our purpose is to just spread information about the full range of reproductive health services and to prevent fraud or misleading information from getting into the public. Yet the California Attorney General admitted that there wasn't a single case that he was aware of where the state had brought fraud charges against the crisis pregnancy center, and he believed only that maybe the county or city of San Francisco had done so. And so Justice Gorsuch was quite right to respond and essentially say, well, why not just enforce your anti-fraud provisions? If you're worried about misleading, you already have laws that apply equally and even-handedly to all businesses and outlets prohibiting fraud. Why not just enforce your anti-fraud laws? Which I thought was a very telling question presented to California Attorney General, and they just didn't have a good answer for it.
Are abortion facilities in the state of California required to advertise for pro-life crisis pregnancy centers?
No, of course not. Of course not. I mean, they're required to give standard informed consent before you undergo a medical procedure, as doctors are from coast to coast. But as far as advertising for the pro-life point of view, no, not at all. Absolutely not.
In what sense is the California law an attempt to kind of tit for tat, an attempt to do to crisis pregnancy centers what abortion advocates believe has been done to abortion providers? And that is, abortion providers in some states have been required through regulation and law to, you mentioned informed consent, but also to provide a broad range of information about adoption and things like that.
Right.
Since this payback?
Yeah, I don't think it's payback. I just think it's specifically targeted for that. I think it's just specifically targeted at pro-life pregnancy centers to diminish the effectiveness of their work. This is something that's not just happened in California. Other states have targeted pro-life pregnancy centers. And I think the legal defense to them is to refer to these informed consent laws. That's part of the legal defense. But I don't think it's payback for informed consent. I think it's its own phenomenon where there has been, if you read a lot of the literature, particularly in the more extreme elements of the pro-choice movement, you see a lot of hostility against pro-life pregnancy centers. So I think it's motivated more by animus against pro-life pregnancy centers than by animus against informed consent laws.
How did this case make it to the Supreme Court? It seems as though, as you said earlier, this is such a transparent attempt to target a certain viewpoint. How did it end up making it all the way to the Supreme Court?
Well, first there's the straightforward path of everyone has a right of appeal to the Supreme Court. California passed this law. It was challenged in court. Both the trial court and the Ninth Circuit ruled against the pro-life pregnancy centers. And so you have a right to appeal to the Supreme Court when that happens. Now, the Supreme Court doesn't have a obligation to hear your appeal, but the Supreme Court chose to hear this appeal in part because there's a conflict that exists between the Ninth Circuit and other circuits, and also because of the importance of the free speech issue here. One of the things that both the state of California and ironically enough, the Trump administration did in its own friend of the court brief was essentially argue that there was a lower level of protection for free speech that applied here than for normal political or cultural or religious activism, that it should be measured under a standard called professional speech and receive a lower order of First Amendment protection. And that raised a really important point about the First Amendment, really, unrelated to abortion. And so there were a lot of very important issues at stake in the case. That's why the Supreme Court took it.
What did you hear? You've mentioned a few statements from the justices as they were hearing oral arguments and asking their numerous questions. What else did you hear from within the oral arguments that was noteworthy to you?
Yeah, you know, I think that one of the things that was noteworthy to me was that it appeared to me, and again, you know, when you're parsing oral arguments, it's kind of like reading tea leaves. It's, you know, it's hard to make precise predictions as to what will happen. But the extremism of California's position seemed to give pause even to some of the more liberal justices. And the argument that they were beginning to make was something along the lines of, okay, rather than saying right out that the California law is constitutional, maybe what we need to really do is send this case back to the lower courts for a trial on the merits to get more information about how it actually affects pro-life pregnancy centers. And that is very different from just saying flat out that the law is correct and constitutional and appropriate. So you could see that there were the liberal justices themselves had some pause about this. Justice Sotomayor was very, very aggressive in defense of the law, but some of the other justices seem to hedge a little bit. So it's going to be very interesting to see how their opinions come out.
David French, senior writer for National Review, is our guest. We're talking about NIFLA v. Becerra, and should pro-life crisis pregnancy centers in California be forced to inform patients about state-funded abortions? When we come back, the content of his amicus brief.
Scientism is not science. It's a dangerous and self-refuting philosophy that fixates on means but ignores wisdom.
Dr. Angus Manoj of the Evangelical Philosophical Society talking about his presentation at the 2018 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
And it leads to the abolition of man as man is reduced to a material object. It's used as a weapon by atheists and skeptics to attack religion as a source of knowledge. It begins with Bacon's dictum, knowledge is power, but it overlooks the way in which power corrupts.
You can meet and hear Dr. Angus Manoj making the case against scientism at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, June 8th and Saturday, June 9th, 15 miles east of St. Louis in Collinsville, Illinois. You'll find a list of speakers, topics, and registration information at issuesetc.org. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 8th and 9th in Collinsville, Illinois.
Your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Looking for a foreign language program that will revolutionize your students' vocabulary knowledge and their understanding of grammar? How about a program that teaches critical thinking skills too? Look no further than Memoria Press's Latin curriculum. Students of all ages can use these Latin study programs. Give your students the language of medicine and law today. Visit memoriapress.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR17. Memoria Press, a classical Christian education that works.
Things when I hear on the radio tonight about Obama being a Christian but not being good because of his pro-choice and homosexuality stances.
Here's a recent comment from the Issues Etc. comment line.
Yet I see no evidence of any literature that in the Bible that you stated that says that these things are against biblical teachings.
The Issues Etc. comment line, available 24/7, 618-223-8382.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking to David French, senior writer for National Review, constitutional law attorney, previously served as senior counsel for Alliance Defending Freedom and the American Center for Law and Justice. He's author of a recent column titled, "At the Supreme Court, California Puts Its Abortion Extremism on Display." We're talking about whether or not crisis pregnancy centers in California can be forced to inform patients about state-funded abortions. On the issue of abortion, Scott Klusendorf, a regular guest here on the program, is going to be making the case for life at the 2018 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, June 8th and Saturday, June 9th, 15 miles east of downtown St. Louis in Collinsville, Illinois. Attendance at the conference is limited to 400. Child care is free for children ages 1 through 12, courtesy of the Lutheran Church Extension Fund. You can learn more and you can register at issuesetc.org or give us a call, 618-223-8385. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 8th and 9th in Collinsville, Illinois. David, you filed an amicus brief on behalf of 41 pro-life organizations in this case. What did you have to say in that?
Yeah, so my friend of the court brief was very focused on the concept of compelled speech, that what California is doing here is quite literally compelling these pro-life pregnancy centers to say a message that they don't want to say. And traditionally, this has been a red line in constitutional jurisprudence. And so what I was trying to point out to the court is you just cannot cross that red line. You cannot erode this strong, long-standing prohibition against compelled speech. It's one of the worst violations of the human conscience. It's one thing to be told you cannot say something. It's another and worse thing to say, be told you must say something. The thing you must say is something you don't believe. And I was reminding the court of his long line of precedent that has declared unequivocally that that is the least favored form of government intervention in the speech. And so I was trying to remind the court of that, and also remind the court of this is not the only case this term where they're dealing with compelled speech. There are other cases, such as the Masterpiece Cake Shop case, where the question is, can a baker be compelled to custom design a cake to help celebrate a gay wedding? That's another form of compelled speech. And so I was trying to remind the court that this is a fundamental bedrock of our constitutional structure, and to actually use the court's own words, it's a fixed star in our constitutional constellation.
In kind of stepping back for a big picture, why do you think, David, the left in America is willing to at least attempt to put a toe over that red line and talk about compelling speech in law or elsewhere?
Well, you know, one of the things I often say is, and have often argued, is that if you look at the legal philosophy of at least some segments of the left, it's almost as if there is a social justice super clause that hovers over the Constitution. That if the goal is to facilitate social justice, if the law is designed to advance social justice, however that's defined, then the law can and should be quite intrusive. That there are interests and values that are so important that they're going to trump other constitutional values. So I'll give you an example. There is a EEO commissioner named Kai Feldblum, who many years ago, in talking about the conflict between religious liberty and the sexual revolution, essentially said if there is a conflict between sexual liberty and religious liberty, sexual liberty should win every time. And so this is a long-standing conflict, legal conflict, between two very different philosophies. And the protection of the First Amendment in this case is rooted in American constitutional history and rooted in the meaning and purpose of the First Amendment. The other side's point of view is rooted in something else entirely.
Has there ever been a case, to your knowledge, where any court has, or let's just stick to the Supreme Court, the Supreme Court has crossed the line and said, yes, for the sake of this other freedom, we need to compel speech from someone?
Well, you know, we have to be talking about what form of speech. So, for example, if you're talking about purely commercial speech, all the time, commercial entities are required to say certain things, like required to give nutrition information on a can of soup, for example.
The tobacco companies recently required to advertise the findings on the product.
Required to put warnings on their product. So in the commercial speech context, that kind of thing happens all the time, but not in the context of artistic speech, not in the context of political speech, religious speech. Those are the core areas that the First Amendment was designed to protect. And in those areas, it's not coming to mind examples where the Supreme Court has said you must celebrate, for example, a religious ceremony that you don't agree with, or a sacred act that you don't agree with, or you must engage in political activism for the other side. I mean, that kind of thing has been, for example, in two very important cases, West Virginia v. Barnett, even in the middle of World War II, Jehovah's Witnesses were told that they did not, by the Supreme Court, upheld the right of Jehovah's Witnesses not to say the Pledge of Allegiance. And Willie V. Maynard, you know, a Jehovah's Witness was told he did not have to drive a car that had a license plate on it that said live free or die. A Irish Catholic parade organizers did not have to include LGBT groups as part of a religious parade, a private religious parade. So time and time again, the holding has been that you do not have to articulate a point of view, a religious, cultural, political point of view that's at odds with your core convictions.
If the state of California is worried that women seeking abortion or in a crisis pregnancy situation do not have enough information, what other recourse do they have other than the law that they have approved?
Oh, they have, you know, they have countless other recourses. I mean, just off the top of my head, they can do, because California is an extraordinarily wealthy state with an enormous state budget. If they want to get a message out, they can. They can do TV advertising. They can do radio advertising. They can advertise on the internet and social media. They could rent a billboard on the very street that a crisis pregnancy center is relocated in and deliver their message in a bigger form than the crisis pregnancy center ever could. They could hire people to hand out leaflets to people coming in and out of crisis pregnancy centers. I mean, their options are countless, and yet they chose instead to commandeer the speech of these pregnancy centers. And, you know, in that circumstance, it seems malicious.
Could it be that part of the goal of this law was not only to coerce speech from crisis pregnancy centers, but given the very limited resources that some of them have, to shut them down?
I think that's quite possible. I mean, there are some centers that may well make the choice that they'd rather shut down than advertise for free abortions, which is a morally defensible position, or that they would hope that the forced advertisements that this is not a licensed facility would deter people from walking in the door. It's possible. I think that would have been, you know, a potential secondary effect.
Do we know what the all-important mind of Justice Kennedy is during oral arguments hearing this case?
Well, we obviously don't know his mind, but we know his statements, and his statements were very favorable to the pro-life pregnancy centers. He seemed to have little patience for the arguments of the California attorneys, and actually was the one who really helped pin down this notion that even a billboard that just was supposed to say choose life would have to have its meaning altered by these required California disclosures. And so he was actually a very forceful questioner of California at oral argument, which is promising. But again, we have to see. We have to wait and see.
If you had to venture a guess, what do you think the court, you've laid out several things they could do, but what do you think the most likely course of action for the court is going to be on this case?
I think the most likely course of action is a clean sweep win for the pro-life pregnancy centers. It would be quite a departure, in my view, in precedent, and a dangerous departure for the Supreme Court to rule that California could compel this kind of speech from pro-life pregnancy centers. And it would require a determination, for example, that there was a lower order of protection applied to this form of speech. And that would be a sweeping consequence. So I think the most likely prediction is that at least five justices are going to squarely rule for the pro-life pregnancy centers. And I think it will not be, my prediction is it will not be a clean sort of 5-4. I think you might have five very strongly ruling for the pro-life pregnancy centers and maybe one or two ruling for them and wanting to rule for them in part and against in part, and one or two who are squarely all the way against.
So in the case, perhaps it might be a composite opinion where concurring opinions disagree for different reasons.
Right, exactly.
What would it mean? What would the clean sweep mean for other states and other such laws?
Well, it would shut down the efforts to try to do this again anywhere else in the country. Now, that's not to say that states wouldn't go back to the drawing board and try to figure out if there's another way to do this that didn't suffer from all of the same problems that California's law suffered from, but the way that California did it would be shut down nationally. That's one of the effects of a Supreme Court ruling, is it's issuing an authoritative decision on a constitutional question that's applicable in all federal circuits. So this would be quite a victory for pro-life pregnancy centers if the court does rule the way that I hope and expect that it will.
So finally, is it possible that this California law may have unwittingly done a great favor to pro-life free speech?
I think it's not only possible, I think it's probable that this California law, as painful as it has been for pro-life pregnancy centers is going to ultimately end up vindicating the free speech rights of pro-life pregnancy centers and protecting them from state efforts to diminish their liberty.
David French is senior writer for National Review, constitutional law attorney, previously served as senior counsel for Alliance Defending Freedom and for the American Center for Law and Justice. He's author of a recent column titled, "At the Supreme Court, California Puts Its Abortion Extremism on Display." You can read this column at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. David, it's always a pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks so much for having me. I deeply appreciate it.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll talk with Chris Roseborough about Kenneth Copeland's claim that Jesus always wills to heal you, and we'll play Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Are you tired of working out at big box gyms? You'll find quality personal training and qualified instruction at Performance Fitness in Edwardsville. You can even work out for a full 30 days before making a commitment to join. Find out more at performancefitness618.com or call 618-692-5063. Performance Fitness is the facility in the St. Louis Metro East where the focus is on member results, not membership numbers. Performance Fitness 618.com.